You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Beginning in the 1990s, evidence began to surface from the scientific community that the kind of repeated head trauma experienced by football players could have serious mental health repercussions.
Since the early 2000s, news of erratic behavior, dementia, and even suicide among some of the sports stars has made its way into headlines around the country. While the NFL claims no guilt, settled concussion-related suits for $765 million this past August, the attention surrounding what some have called a crisis hasn't gone away.
A new Frontline documentary called League of Denial chronicles the expanding evidence that concussions and routine head trauma are dangerous to player health. It also details how the NFL has dealt with the evidence. League of Denial will air tonight on PBS stations from 8 to 10 o'clock. And we're joined now by Jim Gilmore. He is reporter and co-producer of that documentary. Jim, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, Veronica. Thanks very much for inviting me.
Well, League of Denial opens with the story of Mike Webster of the Pittsburgh Steelers. He was an institution on that team for a lot of years, but I wonder if we could start by telling what happened after he left.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Webster, as probably everybody knows in Wisconsin, was a great football player, a very good father and family man, and renowned four-time Super Bowl player for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Tough guy, known as Iron Mike. And what happened after he retired is that his life went down very, very quickly. He was depressed. He was showed violence. He lost the ability to think straight. His wife told us that he just turned into a completely different man. And very quickly, he lost the ability to take care of his personal dealings. Economically, he lost all his money. his marriage fell apart. And he ended up oftentimes living in a car. His physical ailments were so intense that he couldn't sleep, and he would have friends tase him so that he could actually get some rest. Mm. His life fell apart very quickly, and at the age of 50, he died in 2002. And our story, to some extent, really begins after that, after he dies, because what happened was that he ended up with a pathologist who didn't understand why this had happened to this man. The pathologist was a Nigerian-born doctor, a very talented man who didn't know anything about football. But he saw a problem here, and he wanted an answer. And so what he did is he had the brain extracted from Mike's head, and slices were taken from it, and it were sent out to get stained so they could understand what was going on. Why had this man seemed to come down with a case that kind of looked like Alzheimer's disease at such an early age?
And what did they find?
They found a disease that had never been found in a football player before. It's called CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And it's very similar to the disease that affects boxers who have got pounded around and have been in the ring too long and has taken one too many punches. And what it is it's a tau protein, which is in the brain normally, but it sort of goes awry deep down within the brain and sort of from the bottom up. And when he saw this, and it took a while because they did lots of tests, and he didn't really expect to find anything. But what he finally understood was that this was a very important point, because this was caused by something, and he assumed what it was caused by was the continual pounding that Mike took when he played football for almost 20 years as the center on the Steelers, one of the hardest positions. A position where Mike used his head as a weapon, basically, and play after play after play after play, he would have his head pounded into the heads or the bodies of other football players. And over time, what Omalu figured out and others have followed up and believe is also true, this constant battering of the head has huge consequences. And the finding of CTE in Mike Webster really was the beginning of this story to some extent. Even though concussions has been an issue that has been looked at, really, as you said, the early 90s, late 80s, when a series of great quarterbacks had to retire early. And due to that, and due to some of the pressure brought by the press and people like Lee Steinberg, who was an agent who eventually Hollywood fashioned Jerry Maguire after, who got worried about all his star quarterbacks. And he started pushing the NFL to do more, and they were having seminars and such. And eventually, the NFL actually did set up a committee of doctors to look at the problem.
But spend some time in the film taking a look at what actually happens to the head when football players collide, and you have football players themselves talking about it. And it's interesting. Something happens when you... The documentary starts, you show clips of football and football players taking hits, and you're just watching football
right. Like
normal. But as you go deeper into the story, after a while you see these hits, and they start to feel incredibly painful to watch. Like you're seeing something a lot more damaging, you know, than what you appear to see on the surface as normal football. So I wonder how much damage, you know, was done to football players over the year, and how widespread is it? We know about Mike Webster and how severe his case is, but how common is this among football players?
Well, that's the question. That's the big question. Causation and prevalence are the two things that the NFL keeps saying that has never been proven, and that is one reason why the NFL over all these years has been able to sort of say we need more scientific research. There are no answers as of yet, and that's one of the things that's really looked at. But what we focus on is the work of a couple of pathologists, including Dr. Omalu, and then a group that in Boston that became very involved as of 2007. In this research, and because this disease can only be found after the death of a player, you have to take the brain, you have to slice it up into pieces, and then you have to stain it with certain chemicals to find this tau protein. Up until now, it's very difficult to evaluate it. Now, 46 NFL players, plus many, many other brains, have been evaluated in this way, and out of the 46 players that have been dissected, 45 of them have this disease of CTE.
So 45 of 46 players have showed evidence of CTE.
Right, and that's why the pathologists you'll see in the film tonight and the people that work with them have raised red flags about this issue, and their feeling is that the prevalence is much higher than one would expect. Now, what's going on in the scientific community is they're trying very hard, and a lot of people say that right over the horizon is the ability to find this disease in living people. Once that is possible, well, then everything changes, because if you can answer the question of prevalence, and if you can tie it directly to who has it and who doesn't have it, because one of the other issues is when do you get it? I mean, how many times, as you said, how many times do you have to get hit before it? Or things like taking steroids or alcohol use or genetics? Are there other elements to this that make certain people more able to have this disease, and to a large extent that is a very hard question to answer.
Now the NFL has cultivated the idea that football goes hand in hand with violence, that it's this blood sport, you know, for fun that we watch on TV, because
right.
I guess they think that that is what people want. Do you think that influences the players to make it more violent? Does it have to be as violent and as leading to these many concussions, do you think?
It's a combination of factors, and one of the things that players say to us and others that are involved with the sport is the game is even more violent than one realizes, that the public realizes. When you stand on the sidelines of an NFL game, the size of the individuals playing, the speed that these athletes can get going to, the power of the hits that are equivalent to being in an automobile accident going about 25 miles per hour, and this is happening play after play after play, especially for the guys on the line. The violence is exceptional. What makes people the guys that we talk to, the football players, I mean, these are brothers in arms, under arms, basically. They feel like they're going to war with each other. They have a feeling of a responsibility to each other. They're highly paid, and it's very, very competitive to be in this business, and so they don't want to admit when they're injured, if they are injured. And so, therefore, it's a combination of factors that make people play this game and play it to the violent level that it is, and also the public expects it to some extent. I mean, it is fascinating to watch, and it's part of the nature of the game. I think that probably is going to change, and it's already changing to some extent. The NFL is trying to make small adjustments to it so that it's a safer game and try to take the head out of the game. But it's a very difficult thing to do.
We're talking right now to Jim Gilmore, co-producer and reporter on the Frontline documentary League of Denial. And what about you? Have you or someone you know experienced trauma, maybe head trauma from playing football? And what about whether you're a parent? Do you let your children play football? And how do you feel about that decision? Does hearing about this repeated head trauma and the repercussions, does that make you pause for a moment? And what do you think about watching football? Is it morally sound to watch football, knowing what we do about how damaging it is to the player? You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.
We're picking up again with Jim Gilmore, co-producer and reporter on the Frontline documentary called League of Denial, about the concussion crisis in the NFL and the physical costs for NFL players.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this, what's being called a crisis in concussions in the NFL? Do you still watch the game, or does this put you off? Would you let your kids play tackle football? 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Send an email, talk@WPR.org.
And Jim, part of the story is the NFL itself and its evolution and how it deals with the mounting evidence that these brain injuries are serious and lasting. And as you said before, they're widespread,
right,
based on how the NFL players' brains looked after death. So how have they responded over the years, and where are they now?
That's a sort of a main focus of the film. They seem to be in denial for a lot of those years. As far as when even Mike Webster's brain was discovered, what was happening there, that he had CTE. In 2005, Dr. Amalo put out a paper in a very good scientific journal, Neurology and Neurosurgery, and he defined it. He was backed up by several other very famous neuroscientists, and he defined exactly what they had found and what the ramifications of it were. And instead, and his thoughts were that the NFL would be very interested in what he found, because this is such an integral point to understand about the playing football. And what happened instead was this board that they had set of doctors, the MTBI, the members of this board came after him and wanted the paper retracted and rejected his science, and in many ways throughout the years tried to discount everything that he found, because he found other individuals immediately afterwards that also had the same disease. So from that point, the MTBI has sort of a very interesting background. So started in 1994, about 2002 or so, they started putting out scientific papers. By 2007, they had put out 16 reports. And if you follow the science of what they said over these years, the common sort of point that they make over and over and over again is that there's no proof that concussions are dangerous, that they're taken care of correctly. There's no problem in one of the papers reports that if someone gets a concussion in a game, there's no problem in going back into that same game. The same paper says that though there is no research in high school students or college students, that it's possible that there would not be a problem for kids who get a concussion in a game to go back. there's this belief that the NFL player, for instance, is a superhuman being that, somehow can will not be injured in the same way that other people will be injured. If you talk to many, many critics and a lot of scientists at this point, they look back at, these reports and they just question why the science was so wrong. This at a time when other scientists were and other doctors were writing reports that kept on finding these connections to much more depression in retired football players and potential suicides amongst this group. And then the CTE studies that were being slowly collected by pathologists in different parts of the country.
Now, we've got a lot of folks waiting to talk to you, but real quickly, what is the NFL saying today?
Well, I mean, the settlement, they still say there's no direct tie to CTE to football. They have admitted in the past that, yes, concussions can lead to long-term problems, but they said that like once, and then even now, the normal response from the NFL is there's not enough evidence of causation. There's not enough evidence mm-hmm. about the prevalence of the disease. More scientific research needs to be done. And in the film, one ESPN reporter that we talked to, Peter Keating, says, you know, they started studying this back in 1994. It's now 2013, and it seems that that's a long enough period of time where some answers should be have been found over this period of time.
All right. Well, let's get to our callers. Deb is first in Lake Mills. Hi, Deb.
Hi. I just really have a comment, and I think it really is unfortunate that science didn't come to the fore. I have a young son who, between the ages, middle school age, sustained a succession of 3 concussions playing junior high school football, and developed, as far as his psychiatrist was concerned, an attention deficit disorder. And his physician recommended that he never play contact sports ever again.
So it sounds like the doctor ascribed the damage to the head injury.
Exactly. And I was wondering if, you know, Speaker has any information about young people who are, you know, the game of football overall, and children are participating from the ages of 4 on up. And what recommendations he might have for parents with children who sustain concussions at young ages.
All right. Thank you so much for that question, Deb. And Jim, what would you say to Deb?
I mean, I think what Deb is bringing up is probably the most important question out of all of this, and one of the major reasons that I thought that this program was so important to do. You know, we talked to one of the doctors involved and has been involved in this for a long period of time is a doctor by the name of Dr. Cantu, who's based out of Boston University, and he's involved with the group that is working with this Dr. McKee, who's a pathologist, and they have a brain bank that has been looking at this since 2007. And his, you know, he's made some comments over time that he got him in a lot of trouble, but a lot of more people are agreeing with him as time goes by, and his attitude is that the a child's body is very different than an adult's. And before the age of 14, the neck is not developed very well, and the anatomy is just, and the brain has more potential for damage if it's banged around a lot.
So don't let him play football.
He says don't let him play football. The pathologist, Dr. McKee, says the exact same thing. The pathologist, Omalu, says the exact same thing. Now, you know, NFL, I think, understands that this is a huge problem. And what they've been doing is they have a heads-up program where they're trying to, I think they've got 600,000 kids involved with it, where they're trying to teach people the basics of football again and not to use your head when you're tackling. That might be successful. It's certainly a positive thing. But the fear is that, you know, the human body is not made to get it banged, you know, back and forth between, you know, players on the field. It's just not built to do that. And science cannot tell you at this point whether, you know, one individual is more susceptible to it or another is. But one thing is very clear is the younger you are, the more potential damage there might be. And this is a huge problem.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that call, Deb. And let's move to Mark in Wausau. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I only played football in high school, so I was already 14. And I know that, you know, as long as you're aware of what you're doing, we avoided a lot of the injuries. I really don't see where it's that big of a deal to play football, to be honest with you, because I think it's a great team-building sport, a lot of fun. And if you know what you're doing and you play right, you can avoid most of the accidents. Pretty much anything you do nowadays, somebody has the potential to get hurt. And I don't think football is any worse than riding a bicycle, say, where people fall off those all the time.
All right. Well, thank you, Mark. That's an interesting perspective. Maybe we just need to train players how to play safe. What do you think about that, Jim?
Well, I mean, you know, it's an important point, because this always will come up in this debate, because football is a great game, and there's no doubt about it that the team play is exceptionally important for kids to participate in, and there's so many benefits. Plus, the fact it's really fun to watch. It's really fun to do. So the question then becomes, well, then how do you deal with this? And I think slowly there has been change. This macho attitude of always playing even though hurt has to change. This idea that if you've got a concussion, you can go back in sooner rather than later. Multiple concussions is not a problem. There's a lot of things like that can change the rules of the game so that people cannot use their head as much, that run backs on kickoffs are shorter distances, so the momentum of people coming in to do the tackles is less. There's all sorts of changes like that certainly would be useful to happen. Not having full contact practices, number one, is a huge thing, which the NFL already does. But I know in my town, the kids are out there in high school and stuff having full contact practices every night that they're out there. Why that hasn't changed as of yet is a big question.
All right. Well, we'll have to leave it there, Jim. But I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Listen, thank you very much.
All right, we've been talking to Jim Gilmore, co-producer and reporter on the Frontline documentary called League of Denial. And you can catch it on PBS stations tonight from 8 until 10 o'clock.
Next is the news. Then we'll continue our Geek Out series. Wisconsin author Patrick Rothfuss joins us to talk about a renaissance in board games. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.